Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
I feel good, Andrew. I've got new sneakers. You never commented.
I didn't see them. Those are very nice, as a matter of fact.
Air Max 95s?
Yeah. I like them. I'm an Air Max guy. I've got a pair.
You know you're old.
Good choice.
You know you're old when you remember these came out around the first time. I remember when they were new first time.
I've grown to be somewhat brand loyal to Adidas over the years. You know me. I get basically the same shoes every single time. But I do have Air Max.
Stan Smiths.
Those are good shoes. Yeah. Oh, what a show. What a podcast we have coming up. It turned out, I remember last week when we were doing What to Watch For, I think I said something to the effect of, it's not the world's most compelling weekend on paper in the Premier League, but we watch because we love it. And yet here we are, and I feel like there's like a ton of stuff to get into, so we will do that. It's part of the reason that we're here on a Monday in a Champions League week.
Yeah, we don't want it to age.
Right.
We want to talk about it now. There's something I want to talk about less that you have on the rundown, and I'm going to attack you and NBCSN for your coverage of it.
My coverage of it?
Yep. You and NBCSN, the mainstream media's coverage of this non-incident.
Oh.
We'll get to it very soon.
Oh. Non-incident. That can only be referring to one thing.
Yeah. We've got a meaty mailbag as well. I want to thank everyone who sent in the mail.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get to it right now. I can only assume that what you're referring to comes from the Chelsea-Manchester United match.
Yes.
Okay. 2-2 was the final. By the way, before we even get into anything, I had a trivia question for you.
Trivia.
Only one. It will not be a series of trivia questions, although one of these days, I promise, I'm going to bring it back and I'm just going to...
People loved it.
Yeah, I know. I got to do it. I just got to sit down. I got to hammer it out. But here's one for you, JJ. Do you remember the last time United conceded that late in a league game? It happened to be at the exact same time as this one. 95 minutes, 27 seconds.
I do not.
Can I give you a hint?
Go ahead.
It actually involved your team doing the scoring. Liverpool.
That late?
Yeah.
I'm blanking.
2009. David Ngog scored for Liverpool against Manchester United.
He scored the winner.
95 minutes, 27 seconds. I don't know if it was a winner, but that was the last time that United conceded that late in a league match. How's that for a question?
In 2009?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't think that was the winner then.
Okay.
Who
said it was a winner?
David Ngog.
Do you not believe me? This came from Opta.
Are you calling
them liars?
No, I would never call them
liars. Or are you calling my reading comprehension into question?
I'm kind of upset that I didn't get David Ngog.
Yeah, actually, it wasn't your proudest moment.
No, definitely not.
Really frustrating result for United to come back from a goal down. Anthony Martial, who's been much maligned, I think you would have to say, under Mourinho, despite the fact...
Much maligned by Mourinho.
Well, yeah. Despite the fact that Martial, since arriving to United, has scored more goals for them than anyone. But he gets two goals, both of them good goals, and yet it's not enough. They can't hang on right at the death. Ross Barkley comes in off the bench after an initially great save from David De Gea. The double save wasn't going to happen. First it went post from David Luiz, then save off of Rudiger, but then Barkley is there to save a point for Chelsea. Your thoughts?
I think Chelsea were the better team in the first half. I thought United stormed back. They did more than storm back. I thought they dominated the second half. I thought they were very good. And I believe that the maxim that we talk about, first half, keep it tight, don't concede. No. If you're a Jose Mourinho team right now, you need to go behind. You absolutely do. You need to embrace the chaos. I'm not saying go behind by 4 or 5. Definitely not. But there's no question that the freedom that's given to them when the game looks lost. Uh-huh. Now, 1-0 isn't lost, but look what happened against Newcastle. There is a freedom and a verve that comes into their play. And look, you can pick holes in the first goal in particular, where Marcus Alonso did his platoon impression.
Dude, that I have here on the rundown that there were two moments that really annoyed me from this game. One was Pogba on Rudiger's goal for Chelsea that put them up 1-0. And the other is what you're referring to with Marcus Alonso. Like, you are not getting the call, all right? It's over. Whatever you think happened to you that warranted a foul, they're not making the call.
There's also the danger of you playing everyone on side.
That too.
By your impression of a dead horse.
That can't happen. And it was only made to look so much worse because there he is, like you say, just lying there.
In shot.
And as Martial is just standing over him, and now he's got all the time in the world to settle that and smash it home.
No, he did do that excellently.
Yeah.
I think it was undercredited how well he took that, because it's popped up in front of him, and he catches it perfectly on the volley and puts it past Kepa.
But it's a lot easier to do without a defender. He's just lying there.
It actually gets funny the more you watch it back, except if you're a Chelsea fan.
You think
fan.
This has meme potential?
I think it does, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, we got to think about all the ways in which this could be recreated.
I think what you need to do is to take the great historical moments in history and insert a lying Alonso into it.
It was like what happened with Neymar over the summer. Like, there's George Washington crossing the Delaware. Oh no, the boat just hit Neymar as he comes rolling through the river.
George gets to the far side and lying on the beach is Marcus Alonso. Stuff like that, you know what I mean?
But it just annoyed
me so
much.
In fact, if you can think of great moments in history that would have benefited from Marcus Alonso lying there, please let us know.
Yeah, or maybe he could just be inserted into just like beds.
The signing of the Declaration of U.S. Independence, and they're all there, and there he is.
Sleeping. On the floor. And then to see him afterwards, like, he's still kind of arguing with the ref as they're walking back to the center circle, but he's not limping. Like, the jig is up. You were clearly fine, and it just is a thing that would just bother me so much if I was his teammate, if I was Maurizio Sarri.
He miscalculated, Andrew. Completely miscalculated. He thought he would get away with this. You know what? I think that it's Jeff Hendrick from the international break for Ireland that changed this.
I'm sure that was in his head.
Well, no, but maybe it's a new moment. So Harry Arthur is lying in the middle of the field against Denmark, and the Danes stop playing, but they don't kick it out. And Jeff Hendrick says, I'm not stopping play. I'm keeping going. Maybe Jeff has started a trend here.
Maybe. That would be nice.
Because honestly, Andrew, unless it's a head injury, which is very clear to everyone, the game should go on.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Good
sportsmanship aside, on with the game.
Yeah, and it makes you think, too, about, there he is feigning injury in a key moment. And meanwhile, Eden Hazard was just kicked around the pitch for basically 90 minutes of that game. He drew two yellow cards in the first half. Nemanja Matic was probably lucky to have not gotten a yellow card on his first challenge. He then got one on his second one where he just kicked right through the back of Hazard. I was reading, I guess, that, and maybe this would have happened anyway, but Hazard won't be available for Chelsea's Europa League match because he's just banged up generally, like, not with one serious injury or anything like that. He's just generally banged up from Manchester United doing, I guess, what they should do. You do have to be physical with him.
They've got the ability to stop him, as we've seen under Mourinho. I mean, last season it was Ander Herrera that man-marked him, and that was just, I mean, an exercise in shutting him down because he couldn't do anything. And there's very few teams he struggles to do anything against, let's be honest. He's got Brazil's number. He's almost got Liverpool's number already this season with the goal in the Carabao Cup. So
I just love him because he's involved in every positive move, it seems, that Chelsea make.
He's buzzing round the place. He gets on the ball. Your expectation goes up. He holds people off. He's quite strong. He's fantastic.
There's even moments where I feel like he should be involved more, and it's no fault of his, but late in that game, Chelsea are chasing the game now, and they're down 2-1. I wonder if you remember this. He gets the ball kind of at like the corner of the 18-yard box. Beautiful backheel to David Luiz, and then right off of his backheel, he kind of spins and makes a move towards goal, and he's screaming, give it back to me. I'm Eden Hazard. I score goals. My manager thinks I can score 40. You're David Luiz. It's not what you do. Pass it back, and Luiz instead takes a shot from a difficult angle. If he slips it into Hazard, they may score there.
To be fair, he picked up the ball in a similar scenario and walloped it over the bar. Now, it looked to me like it was flying. And look, in every scenario, I'm saying I want Eden Hazard to shoot there. But, I suppose I take your point on
agree.
That.
Just agree. Just agree. Why? What is this gene in you?
That I must overanalyze it.
You have to disagree.
Yeah, get him on the ball.
Thank you. Is that so hard? Now, I mentioned before that in addition to Alonso, Pogba annoyed me as well. Because I'd like to know, when Rudiger scores the goal on the header, who is he screaming at? He's like waving his arms. He's gesticulating. He's all angry. You're man marking. Every replay shows it. He turns his head. And in that moment, Rudiger recognizes it, spins around Lindelof, who I think it was Luiz who kind of set a screen on Pogba. Lindelof is marking Luiz. It's not his job to switch there. And Rudiger goes in for an uncontested header. And Pogba turns around and it looks like he's barking at Lindelof. Switched off.
Yeah. Was it Lindelof? Because some national newspaper in England read it as him being frustrated at himself, screaming into the abyss, as it were.
I guess maybe that's the case. It looked to me like I almost thought he was waving his arms in Lindelof's direction. And I thought Lindelof even acknowledged and kind of shrugged his shoulders at him.
The slow-mo is something incredible, because midway through, as Rudiger connects with the ball, Pogba is making a vain attempt to like put his leg across him.
He's got
to
do something.
Yeah, but you look at Pogba's face, and he is going, no, that's not even funny. It's actually happening. I'm not making this up. And it was like another platoon moment.
This match was full of them. Should we get to the incident that you're talking about, or do you have more?
Well, the podcast is so packed, and I'm so worried that we'll go too long on this. But I don't want to become what I hate the most. But I will talk about yesterday's NBCSN coverage. And it covered this incident in far too much detail for what happened.
So for those who don't know, it was after Rudiger score, or not Rudiger, after
Barkley
scores the equalizer in the 96th minute. Marco Ianni.
Who is a staffer.
He jumps off Chelsea's bench in joy.
Runs across Mourinho, which Mourinho doesn't have a problem with.
Well, he looks at Mourinho and pumps his fist.
But that's on the way back. That's the problem.
I thought on the way back, he just yelled something at Mourinho. I thought on the way through, he looked at Mourinho, pumped his fist, and then kept going. Then on his way back, he said something again. It was the second time.
Mourinho took exception and shot out of his seat to get down the tunnel or close
to get at him.
To get at him. There wasn't a fist thrown. There wasn't a punch landed.
Okay.
We saw it. Mourinho dealt with it, because thankfully Mourinho was able to recall in the post-match afterwards the amount of times he was a total and utter in the same way that Marco Ianni's been, and decided that, look, no more should come of this. Let's stop talking about it, because there was nothing. And there really was nothing. In fact, I think it was the white heat of the upset and the frustration and having conceded that made Mourinho shoot out of his technical area anyway, because if he had been a little bit more calmer, he would have reflected upon the other things he's done. Like, for example, celebrating on the pitch at Barcelona when Inter Milan knocked them out, for sticking his finger in the eye of Barcelona coaches, for going over with 3 minutes left on the clock when Villa visited Chelsea when he was last Chelsea manager, and trying to shake hands with Roy Keane and Lambert in the most blatant attempt at manager emasculation I've ever seen. So Mourinho settled it. He even mentioned it in his, because this is your next question on the rundown. You mentioned about, well, what should happen to Ianni? Nothing. Like, absolutely nothing.
Well, I only asked that because Maurizio Sarri suggested that it will be taken care of internally. And yeah, I'm wondering what that means.
That means he sits down, he goes, Marco.
Well, then you must have hated what, was it Phil Neville on the call?
Oh, Phil.
He called for him to be fired.
For God's sake. This is Phil Neville, who, Sir Alex Ferguson, who would scream and roar at fourth officials, who would bully referees in the post-match press conference, and I'm sure afterwards. A man who watched Andy Durso being chased round the field by an angry Roy Keane as his captain. Where did he get so sensitive?
It is funny where we draw the line on what is, I mean, now, maybe I'm, I don't know if I'm quite to your level where it's like, oh, whatever, this doesn't matter. You know, I can understand Mourinho being angry with Marco Ianni for having done
this. He sits him down and he goes, Marco, we have standards to maintain at Chelsea Football Club. Don't forget the eyes of the world are on you now. This is not Sunday League. And doing what you did was a bit cringeworthy, because we have a higher standard and it was a late equaliser. Thanks, Marco. See you next week.
Yeah.
That's it.
And for me, sometimes we talk about, this all gets kind of like charted up into the category of we remember. So today this happened to Jose Mourinho, and Marco Ioane did this to him. All right, like, you're going to play again. At some point, presumably, Manchester United will get their revenge. And so now, like, if you're Chelsea, you can't say anything when Mourinho does whatever he decides to do in that moment. Now, maybe he'll take the high road.
I think Mourinho, and there's no wrongs for me, it's a thing that happens. I mean, it happens all the time. Like, for example, actually, no, I've got to save this, because on Thursday's podcast, we're doing Red Cards Man of the Match, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about these things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So this has really resonated with you.
It has. And also, I would like to say to Rebecca Lowe, she said one of her throws to the break was, when we come back, we'll talk more about the fisticuffs at the bridge. Fisticuffs? Not one fisticuff was thrown. Not one fist was thrown. They went overboard. I would have loved if they had analysed the frankly terrible defending of David Luiz.
Here's the only thing that I would say on their behalf, if I was going to try to defend them for a moment.
And I know what you're going to say.
Well, it's easy to sit here now, having watched it, rewatched it, we're a couple days removed from it. But think about watching that game live in the moment. An incredibly dramatic goal is scored. All of a sudden, you look over on the sidelines and Mourinho is fighting somebody in the tunnel. You then look.
He's not fighting him.
But you can't. I'm talking about in the moment. You don't know. All you see are bodies and security swarming, and they're in the tunnel, so you can't see what's going on. But you know Mourinho's involved. Then you look out on the field and players are starting to push and shove there. It was about as chaotic of a 5-minute stretch as we've seen so far in the season.
You've been to the Jersey Shore, right?
Oh, yeah, many times.
And you've seen what happens when a couple of bros get a bit too broad up on brewskis.
Hold me back, bro.
No, seriously. And they're literally grabbing people to get in the way. That was what it was.
But I'm talking about in the moment. You've seen it 100 times. You've been able to digest it. Rebecca Lowe is reacting in real time to the most chaotic moment of the season so far.
She's reacting on Sunday.
The day after?
24 hours after. And she's calling it fisticuffs.
That's a broad term.
Anyway, before we get off Chelsea Man United, can I say something?
Yeah. Absolutely.
About Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Duncan Alexander, who is of the Opta House of Opta, put up an interesting tweet. Opposition clear-cut chances. That means goals that should ordinarily be scored. Think of Shaqiri versus Chelsea.
Okay.
Or how Chelsea used magic to stay unbeaten. So Manchester City have allowed 5 of these type of chances and conceded 3. Liverpool have allowed 7. Conceded 1. Mm. Chelsea have allowed 17 and they've conceded 2 of these massive, enormous chances.
People don't want to hear this because it's gray area in a world of black and white. But JJ, you do not win in soccer, in basketball, in anything without luck. You just don't.
Oh, Andrew, I'm sorry, but you can quantify it well, because I'm high even.
Yeah, this is quantifying it. You've just quantified
that. That is luck. That is what luck is called.
Yep.
Now, I can hear them already. I hear them rumbling on the Twitterverse when they hear this podcast, our Chelsea listeners. I have loved watching Sarri ball and Chelsea this season, particularly the Liverpool game. I actually enjoyed it. Once it was a 1-1, I was happy to watch it back. Chelsea have been fantastic. I'm not having a go at the way they've played. I'm not having a go at Jorginho or Eden Hazard.
By the way, if you were, you wouldn't be alone. We had Miguel Delaney on just last week, and I said to him, are you surprised that Chelsea have clicked this quickly? And he said, I actually don't think they've clicked.
There you go. And that is just an interesting statistical look at Chelsea not clicking.
Yeah. A couple of stats I got from, this is a big, we're doing a lot of Opta promotion.
We're
here.
Not. What we're doing with Opta. Well, we'll get them to sponsor us. Actually, don't do that, because it'll be the XG podcast featuring Robot Gundling.
But I thought this was amazing. Chelsea have not lost at home when they held a halftime lead since October of 2011 against Arsenal.
That is interesting.
It's literally 7 years. It's been 10 draws, I think 54 wins. Now, this isn't exactly how they drew it up to score in the 96th minute in this one, but it did preserve that streak. Also, one other one for you. United have just 1 clean sheet so far this season. Do you know how many they had last year at this very time?
They had 5?
7.
Ooh.
That is worrisome because, I guess it makes sense. They've struggled, and they're not defending the way that they were last year. Offensively, they're similar. But last year they were able to defend, and this year it's been much more inconsistent.
All that money that's been spent on the like of Lindelof, Bailly has solved very little for them.
I think that is the takeaway there. Let's see. Leicester-Arsenal. treated us to a pretty enjoyable Monday afternoon match.
Fun times. Yeah. Leicester deserved to go ahead.
Yep.
There was a controversial penalty not given in that first half as well, which I'm happy to say should have been given. I know Kyle Martino made the point that the hand of Mustafi, I think it was headed into the ball, meaning that he collided with the head of a Leicester player and then hit the ball, but it was above his head. And look,
no one knows the rules.
I never know, so I would have gone penalty. But then Arsenal kind of clicked into gear and scored this is wondrous goal from Mesut Ozil to equalise. Andrew, it was he glided across the turf and glided it home in off the post. It was glorious. And then they got another one, and then they got another one.
All of their goals were pretty enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, and Aubameyang's two goals were gorgeous.
Yeah.
So it was a... Now, I will say this. Right before they turned the screw on Leicester, Leicester did hit the crossbar. And if that goes in, it's a different game. But credit to Arsenal. They attacking-wise, they look wonderful. I also really... Torreira, for me, is... He's so aggressive at nipping in and winning the ball and creating turnovers and chances. Bellerin was fantastic. Now, they do... A lot of what is good about Arsenal is coming through Bellerin right now, which is kind of a worry. You'd probably want it more centrally or more midfield-wise. But still, they clicked again, just like they did for passages against Fulham. And it felt... It gave me that old The Arsenal feeling.
They were fun to watch.
Yeah.
They really were. Now, they might have been a little bit lucky not to have been two down early on, because Bernd Leno, who's getting an opportunity and may not relinquish it, made a phenomenal save on Harry Maguire on a header early on in that match.
Right.
So that certainly helped set them on their way a little bit. Leicester did score afterwards, thanks to Ben Chilwell.
Leicester don't have much luck at the Emirates, I have to be honest.
Yeah, I remember, what was the 5-4 that started the season... last year, or 4-3, was
4-3
it?
Or something like that.
They gave up two goals after the 80th minute.
Even in the title-winning year, you remember they lost. We had Christian Fuchs on the show that week. It was going into a break, and they lost. And we thought, you were saying to me, uh-oh, this is Spurs' chance now. Sorry.
You'll burn for that.
But I remember they had a blatant penalty on Vardy, and it wasn't given. So, anyway.
By the way, you mentioned Ozil. He's now scored 30 Premier League goals. That is the most by a German player ever in the Premier League.
That surprised me somewhat. And then I thought about it. Karl-Heinz Riedel didn't score that many for Germany, for Liverpool. And I thought Klinsmann, your boy, would have done that for Tottenham.
Was he there long enough?
He really wasn't. And he was in teams that were struggling against relegation.
They avoided it. Yep. Take that laugh back. Speaking of Tottenham.
I have nothing to say.
Okay.
That's not true. That's
I'm
not
sure
true.
You don't, because Eric Lamella played well, and you decided a few weeks ago that he's not good.
I tweeted out on our official account that JJ got it wrong, because I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, they got performances from a couple guys that desperately needed them, one of whom I thought was Hugo Lloris, who made a couple tremendous saves.
He has one that's when the Golden Glove is given out at the end of the season, that's going to be in the running for save of the season.
Well, he had the one early on a header. That was kind of a soft header, but it was perfectly placed.
No,
and he did everything.
Andrew, that was going past him. That was a brilliant save.
Right. But then the save he made late in that game, I think it was Arnautovic. The ball came to him. He's going basically one-on-one with the keeper. And Hugo is quick off his line. Arnautovic still gets the shot off, but Hugo gets a glove up and is able to save the game for Spurs in what would have been a real gut punch had that gone in. So that was important for Hugo Lloris, who's had... Let's be honest, this has been, since France won the World Cup, the DUI, the injury, it's been bad for him.
As the French would say, un fiasco solemne.
Yep, they say that all the time. And then the other one that I guess I have to eat my words just a little bit is Moussa Sissoko, who was actually great in this game. Set up Lamella's goal, played well all game.
He was good, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I actually tweeted out apologies on your behalf as well.
Did you?
Yeah, I did, because you've been...
Fair.
You pretty much said off air to me, I want
off air. I had a segment where I referred to complaining about him the same way that you refer to a secretary or a boss who has an affair with a secretary.
Oh, that's right. That was one of your great
analogies. It's a cliche. All Spurs fans can't. It's a cliche. You don't like Sissoko. It's just an annoying cliche. But he was really good, and you got to give credit when it's warranted.
You said that you'd pay his wages for the end of the season as long as he didn't pull on a Spurs kit again.
No, I never said that.
No.
I would never dare to make a false promise. By the way, speaking of Lamella, In his last, I think it's 9 games, he's been directly involved in 10 goals, 7 goals, 3 assists. He is, I don't want to say that he has saved Spurs' season so far, but the thing that's interesting about Tottenham is that they have not played all that well. Like their wins, they've got 21 points right now. They're just 2 behind City and Liverpool.
It's ridiculous.
Right. I mean, this is the best that they've ever been in the league at this point in the season. But I haven't, you know, I've watched all their games, and I can't tell you a game where I thought, yeah, like, they look great today. Even the 3-0 against United, they got a couple second-half goals.
Oh, listen,
know, it was kind of
the goals
bit...
were great, but the general play, United had the preponderance of it.
Right, and yet, like, they keep finding a way to do it, and a lot of that has been Lamella, which is interesting because he seems like he's turning back into the player that I think they originally thought they were getting. Goal scorer, creator. He wasn't that for the first few years of being with Spurs. He was more just aggressor, like be annoying, win possession back, you know, be that guy. But now he's doing what they thought he'd be doing, and it's been a huge lift for them. And he's probably been the biggest reason why they are where they are right now. Let's see, Cardiff 4, Fulham 2. Oh, JJ.
Yeah.
JJ. This is the first time that Cardiff has scored 4 or more goals in a top-flight game since...
4 or more.
1961.
Oh, lordy.
What has happened to America's team?
Will you indulge me?
Yes.
Okay, so I did a little deep dive on this weekend's game. So, Schürrle scores a beauty to open the scoring.
By the way, the set on him to even attempt it.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And an old problem emerges for Josh Murphy's equaliser for Cardiff. They are playing Callum Chambers at right back. They went to 4 at the back. Essentially, he is a centre back at full back, which can work, but it's also conceding that something's been going wrong. They played 4-3-3. Now, they got ripped apart when Cyrus Christie played at right wing back, so they abandoned that. Remember against Arsenal before the break. So Jokanović addressed it, which is what a manager should do, but it made no difference. Chambers is totally out of position on the goal, and it's actually Schürrle who's trying to make up the ground to stop Murphy, as it turns out, because he's out of the play, Callum Chambers. The second Cardiff goal, oh boy, Tim Ream. I don't know what he's trying to do, but he totally mishits or miscontrols the ball. It runs in, Bobby Reid finds the net. Then a really excellent move, Schürrle pings it into Mitrovic, and then he finds Sessegnon. Great goal. And you're like, all right.
Yeah. Historic goal, too.
Why is that?
Ryan Sessegnon is now the first player born after the year 2000 to score in the Premier League. Doesn't that make you feel old?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. The third Cardiff goal. Again, cross comes in. Ream stabs at it, doesn't get it. There's a tackle, and it squirms past Bettinelli. It's not great defending, but it's also there's a little bit of a fluke element to it. And the fourth goal, it's just bad luck because Ream slips in the middle of the park initially, and then they break down the field and eventually they put the ball in the net. Now, Jokanović has said this. He said, it's individual mistakes, it's errors that are killing us. And honestly, I couldn't argue with him against it at the weekend. Like, it was just poor shape from Chambers, a couple of mistakes by Ream. Cardiff played well, and I want to give Cardiff their due, but...
Well, so what is it that you're driving at? Don't blame the manager?
I'm saying that Sky Sports reported today Jokanović's job is not under threat, and there's no time frame from Shad Khan on saving his job.
There was an initial report that he was being given 2 games to save his
job.
Now,
do I believe this? Not really. No. What I'm saying is Fulham's next 2 league games are against Bournemouth and Huddersfield. I don't care how well Bournemouth are going, and Huddersfield... Khan is going to look at those games and he's going to need to see 4 points minimum out of those.
Absolutely. And especially with Huddersfield, a club that has scored 4 goals this year, which is the fewest in the league. And Fulham are a team that are giving up goals like they're going out of style. They've conceded 25.
I honestly think he needs to get back to basics. He needs to abandon the 4-3-3 because it's leaving too much space attacking his fullbacks. They're finding gaps in between. Opposition players are finding gaps in between the line. They're finding space. 4-4-2. Seriously, I know it's going to be a little bit trickier to accommodate Schürrle into that system, but he's got to go back to basics.
The missionary position of soccer formations.
Yeah, that's excellent. You did a funny thing, my man. that's what I feel.
Yeah, it's interesting with them because if you look at what they were last season, now I don't want to say it was like this, but if you remember in the championship, they were pretty bad at the start of the campaign, and then they ended in just the most unbelievable fashion. What did they? It was like they ended the season with like 16 straight unbeaten or something like that.
Yeah, they shot
to get themselves almost. They almost avoided the playoff.
They won the playoff final, don't forget. It's not like they came up automatically.
But they nearly were so good at the end of last season that they avoided the playoff and finished in the top two.
That's right. And then they had a little blip at the end, I think.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe they're slow starting. But it's largely a different team, though, so it's hard to figure out.
But I looked at that, Andrew, though, and look, defensively, Tim Ream's still there. Adoy is still there. Okay, the fullbacks have changed, but you got to think that Callum Chambers can play better at fullback than he did the other day. I just think Seri, Johansson on the left and right of that midfield three, just try and be more conservative is what I'm saying. And if that means 4-4-2, so be it.
We're 9 games in, so it's I don't know how much you can really say that it's still early, but I'll ask the question at this point in the season. Are Fulham the biggest disappointment in the league?
Oh, I think so. We got really excited about the players that they brought in. We got excited about the fact that they'd kept Sessegnon, they'd kept Mitrovic, and then they added in players like Seri and Shula, and we were like, oh my God.
Yeah.
They're going to be gorgeous going forward. It's been sporadically gorgeous, but at the back, oy, oy, oy.
The thing for me that I've been trying to kind of grapple with in terms of that question, it comes down right now to Fulham or Manchester United. And it's actually pretty comparable if you consider what each club's aspirations are. Manchester United are 9 points off of first.
Okay.
Right now. Fulham are 9 points off of mid-table, say 10th. So it's kind of, they're like equidistant from where they'd want to be. Now, if you're going to think about it going beyond that, what is the tiebreaker? Well, I mentioned the fact that Fulham have scored or conceded 25 goals in 9 games. They're on pace to give up over 100 goals, which is horrifying. But beyond that, remember back to the summer, and I know you've alluded to it throughout, Liverpool, Chelsea, Fulham. That was the order of the clubs that spent the most money in the summer transfer window. Mm. They're the first club ever, promoted club ever, to spend over £100 million in a transfer window. I mean, they went for it. Like they are so clearly not getting returns on investments that they believed they had made during the window.
But again, those investments were made largely up the field. They weren't made on where they probably needed to be.
Well, you just said Callum Chambers.
Yeah, I know, but they're playing him. They're so stuck for a fullback, like an out-and-out fullback, to lock down that right-hand side that's where Chambers has ended up.
Well, they've moved Sessegnon, it seems, a little bit further up. I wonder if maybe he should go back.
I don't know.
And by the way, that is part of this too. They spent that money, and it's not even like they spent all this money, but their net spend must have been more evened out with guys they gave up. No, they kept Ryan Sessegnon. Like, they could have made a fortune off of him to offset some of that wild spending. They kept everybody.
If you see the second goal and break it down, it's such a good goal that there's no way they'll want Sessegnon playing in a defensive position. So maybe January is somewhere they have to go back to the well again and maybe rethink their strategy a little bit. But can I give credit to Neil Warnock?
Certainly.
And can I give credit to JC Pillars, who left a review? Cardiff City strategic fouls. English Andy never criticised the tactical brilliance. Warnock's Welsh Warriors fouling when the back is turned. How dare you? This team is awesome. Cardiff will stay up. It's destiny. So JC Pillars, he sent that before this weekend. He knew this result was happening because he knows the mind of the Warnock wizard.
No, don't you? He's having fun at my thing that frustrated me. Remember? I said how much it bothered me that
but he's also,
Junior Hoylett just kicked Kieran Trippier for no reason when he's back to goal.
I know that, but mixed into this, he's also made a prediction, and it's coming true. Cardiff will stay up.
What do you say? Cardiff are awesome? This team is awesome?
This team is awesome. Cardiff will stay up. It's destiny. By the way, if you'd like to leave...
Why is it destiny?
Because JC Pillars knows something we don't. By the way, if you'd like to leave a wonderful review on iTunes for this podcast, please do. And if it's Cardiff related, all the better.
Yeah. Let's see. Before we take a quick break and go to what to watch for, I do want to let you know that other things are happening. They are in the world.
Indeed, and one of them is Wayne's World.
Oh my God, is it ever?
Wayne's World, party time, excellent.
Excellent.
Woo! You talk about resorting to cliches. The fact that we just played that when we're about to talk about Wayne Rooney is pathetic.
He's in America. It's right. One of the great cult American classic films. Do you not enjoy it?
Wayne's World?
Yeah.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Right, so.
But it's just like, oh, we're about to talk about a guy named Wayne. Well, we have no choice but to play
Wayne's World!
You're better than that.
One of the things listeners enjoy is the audio diversity of this podcast.
I see.
How dare you?
Well, it is official. Wayne Rooney is the new Robbie Keane. It's official.
It's not official.
He's won the Robbie Keane Award. And DC United are going to the playoffs. That is official.
Brooks is a listener. And he is excited. Because he emailed at the start of the season with a very, very woe-is-me attitude about this team. Never in a million years could I have expected this. Then Brooks gets carried away. Can you think of a turnaround in any sport that compares to this? I have a few, Brooks. Leicester City, Deportivo versus AC Milan, 2005, 4-1 down from the first leg. Depor came back and won 5-4.
Hang on, can we go through these one at a time? So your first one, I don't think, works.
It does work. Leicester City were nearly relegated.
Right, the year before, he's talking about within the span of a season.
He didn't say that.
That's what he said. Can you think of it? It didn't need to be said.
Of a turnaround. Oh.
They were bottom in the Eastern Conference, JJ.
All right.
DC United.
All right, Depor versus AC Milan was in the same leg.
In June, I think. I think it was as late as June where they were bottom. No, and you can't, I don't think it's comparable to within one, like, Champions League tie.
Cavs comeback, 3-1, when they were 3-1 down.
We're talking about in a season.
Pats versus Falcons, Super Bowl 51.
Are you just, like, not listening or what?
Red Sox-Yankees, ALCS 2004. No, it's amazing. Since Rooney arrived, Brooks goes on, DCU have won 39 of a possible 60 points. We are 13-2-2 at home and scored the third most goals in the East to go with it, plus 10 goal differential. Good stuff, DC United. By the way, Luciano Costa just dribbles past.
Oh, man, that was so good.
Yeah, well, Dom Torrent didn't think that at all. The NYCFC manager did something that, I don't want to get off DCU or Wayne Rooney, but I will
go ahead.
Just for 1 second, he questioned his players' attitude, and in particular their attitude on that goal. NYCFC are in a bit of a blip right now, heading into these playoffs. I'm wondering, is the manager questioning attitude at this time of the season a good idea? Is he trying to jolt them out of their stupor? Their stupor, or I don't know.
Maybe it's the exact right time to do it.
Maybe.
Yeah, I saw this, JJ, on the Twitter feed Sporf, where they note that DC United were bottom of MLS on June 28th. Then they signed Rooney, and then in 19 matches, he has scored 12 goals with 6 assists, and now they are playoff bound and kind of a team that you don't want to play.
No.
I think you would have to say. And it's funny.
I said that last week, and you're like.
No, you said last week, now they're going to win a trophy.
I think they are.
I said, pump the brakes.
I think it's going to be.
I said, they're still good teams.
Between them and LAFC. How about that?
Well, that is possible, but I think that the East has some teams above DC United that would still worry me. But maybe it wasn't such a crazy thought. It is funny, though, the moments that can change everything. Like when Wayne Rooney had the play against Orlando City.
The tackle,
the feed to Acosta, the goal to win that game. It really, like, it felt like a turning point moment for them.
Absolutely. It seemed to fire up that team. Also, I think Rooney's so lucky now. He's really enjoying his football. That's clear. It's evident. But Luciano Acosta and his ability to be creative and also be his legs a little bit has really helped things.
He's been incredible. And that's gone a little bit underreported, I think, because of Wayne Rooney. And in addition to that, I want to mention La Liga and chaos unfolding there. The table right now is, simply put, for what we're accustomed to with this league, it's basically unrecognizable. Now, you do have Barcelona at the top after their win over the weekend. But after them is Espanyol. So right now, Barcelona... Man, that derby is going to be so intense. and then Alaves is third. Sevilla, fourth. Atletico have dropped out of the top four. They're now fifth. Valladolid are sixth.
Powerhouse.
And then finally, in seventh, we get to Real Madrid, who finally scored a goal again, but they still lost the match 2-1.
Incredible. It's unbelievable. And if I may direct people towards Graham Hunter's article on ESPN about Real Madrid right now, because the rumor was that Lopetegui was gone. Lopetegui says he'll fight on. I think he's obviously on borrowed time. I think it's got to be a matter of days, considering this is Florentino Perez that he's dealing with. But he talks about the general dysfunction behind the scenes at Real Madrid. And, you know, there's no footballing director. There's not actually a really cohesive plan beyond the manager. But one of the interesting things he talks about was the big players like Ramos and Varane and Benzema not delivering right now. And he said that there is a complacency in this Real Madrid team that means the slog of the league, the player's attitude is just not good enough to roll their sleeves up and get stuck into these teams. And that's been for quite some time now. And he points out that Barcelona were always, what were they always able to do? Consistently win La Liga. Mm-hmm. Whereas Real Madrid have been this team that can get themselves up for the Liverpools, for the Manchester Cities, for the whoever's in European competition. But that this idea of your bread and butter, you've got to go to Leganés, you've got to go to, I don't know, Real Betis and win. Yeah. They struggle.
That better not carry over to midweek because they have Victoria Pilsen in the Champions League.
That's a very good point.
And then look who comes calling at the weekend for them. El Clasico coming up
without,
on Sunday.
Well, now they've got a reprieve in the sense that Lionel Messi's broken arm is going to keep him out for 6 games. And that is, I don't care what anyone says, that is such a boon to them. Because it may be the difference between them getting a shellacking and maybe a lesser
just
beating.
Just losing mildly.
I think, seriously, with the state that they're in right now.
Yeah, I saw a video today also of Sergio Ramos getting into it on the training ground with a youth team player.
Yeah, I'll talk about that as well. That's part of my
on Thursday.
Yeah.
So we have to wait 3 days to be able to address it.
Yeah. We do.
You can't find another red card between now and then.
No, because it's a combined segment. You know on those shows on Fox where they tell us how things, where a contributor comes on to tell us how kids were much tougher in the 1950s? This is my segment.
Wait,
you know where they say, oh, everybody's softer now. Everything is so much milder. You can't do this or that.
I've seen kids in the 1950s. They're playing with yo-yos and frisbees.
I know.
They didn't look so tough.
But you know what I mean, this trope that Fox puts out on Fox News.
I see.
So I'm going to do my version of that.
Kids these days. Let's see. I'll tell you what. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with a little what to watch for. Also, I saw a movie over the weekend. I don't know if you've seen it yet. I'm curious. I'll get your thoughts. A Star is Born.
I have not.
Well, now we know. We'll be back after this. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, you said you have not seen A Star is Born.
I have not.
So Amanda and I went to the movies this weekend. Now, I so badly try to avoid being spoiler guy because I know how much I hate it when people say that to me.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say, hopefully, anything that would give it away. But I guess if you're hypersensitive to it, then maybe hit the fast forward button a couple times right now, just in case. This is the first time, this movie, that I was in the theater and you could, it's sad, like there's a sadness to parts of the movie and like you could audibly hear people in the theater crying.
Weeping.
Yeah, usually like you'll just hear, like, I don't know, people usually in a movie don't bawl. Like they'll just kind of like cry softly or like not make a sound, but they'll have a tear in their eye.
Right.
Like I could hear people rows away. Like that.
Seriously.
Yeah. It was not, I don't know. Good movie, tremendous acting. Glad I saw it. But
first time I heard tears in the theater.
Have you ever cried in a movie theater?
Anya O'Hara started crying beside me in high school, a friend of mine. She started crying during Titanic.
Which scene?
Oh, the bit where he falls off the cabinet when he's... when he's about to become a fish finger.
You are so, you just have no depth to you.
And I've cried. I cried. The last time I cried was at the end of Control.
Control?
It's a
film. I don't think I've ever heard of it.
It's a film about the lead singer of Joy Division.
I don't even know who that is.
You've never heard of Joy Division?
No. Or
let's move on quickly before I cause a disturbance.
Is that embarrassing?
It's just one of the seminal artists, seminal bands of the past 50 years. But move
really?
On.
Really?
Very important band.
Of the past 50 years.
Have you heard of New Order?
Yeah.
They were the band, the precursor, when Ian Curtis...
Seminal band, so we've got like the Rolling Stones,
yeah.
Led Zeppelin.
In the genre of music.
Joy Division.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm alone in saying that that's just not
true. They probably spawned a movement in New York City of similar bands. But yeah, that's fine. It's fine.
Let's see. What to watch for? Here, I have every game in front of me, but I don't want to just list them. I think that's boring.
Plus, we'll talk about...
On Thursday, we're going to have another podcast out for you mid-afternoon recapping these. There's a couple games that I just had like a quick thing to mention. Obviously, maybe the biggest game... of the next couple days. Tuesday, 3 o'clock, Cristiano Ronaldo, in some uncertain times for him, makes his return to Old Trafford.
Yes.
Against Manchester United in a game that we weren't sure whether or not he would be available for after...
But he only got one match.
Right.
So that was the Young Boys of Bern game. So right. Therefore, he's free to play in this one. Returned to the press conference, pretty much batted away questions about the... major issue that's overshadowing him right now.
It's kind of the posture that he really has to take. If you're going to deny, then you almost have to be indignant in your denial. So as a way of almost like show people, look how mad I am, or look how dismissive I am of this. There's no way it could be true. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm sure he could not have imagined that this would be, because I felt like this was going to be, he's so beloved at Manchester United in a way that he's not at Real Madrid, as successful as he was.
Well, he's always speaking so highly of them since having left. I mean, when Alex Ferguson was sick over the summer, didn't he describe him as the man who taught him how to play football?
Yeah. Yeah. And look, all that aside, this is a huge fixture going back historically. They had so many battles in the Champions League, and there was that famous turnaround in Turin in 99 on the way to the treble. So this game's got a lot of history behind
it. It's also very important. I mean, just with like looking at the immediacy, you know, Juventus are probably going to be fine. They've won both of their first couple matches. United, of course, had the one draw against Valencia. If United lose this one to Juve, which is conceivable, Valencia defeat Young Boys, all of a sudden now it's going to be a nervy last three matches for Manchester United in the competition. Let's see, Manchester's other club, Manchester City, paying a visit to Shakhtar Donetsk. Now, I wanted to mention this because Ilkay Gundogan said something. He had a quote to ESPN FC that was really interesting to me. He said, the Champions League is, in terms of club football, the most prestigious one. And if you, let's say this way, if you don't win it, you will never be named one of the greatest teams. No chance. That's what he says. They, Manchester City, have never been past the semifinals. They didn't start all that well this go-around either with that loss to Lyon, and then kind of struggled a little bit to get past
Hoffenheim.
Hoffenheim,
they got it done. So
they
yeah,
did.
But he's right.
Do you agree with what he's saying, that if they don't win a Champions League, no matter what they may do in the league, they set the points record last year, they set the margin of points difference between them and the second-place club record. I mean, Manchester City were so hands down the best team in a league considered by many to be the best league in the world, but without Champions League success, they can't be looked upon as one of the best teams in the world.
Part of the footballing purpose of the takeover of Manchester City was to win a Champions League. So absolutely. None of the success domestically will suffice without adding a Champions League. It will not. That money was not just spent to dominate England.
I like what he's saying. I think it's the right attitude for them to have. But in terms of the way that I, like I'm a regular fan, the way that I perceive Manchester City, they, like, I can still look at them, see how good they are, and decide for myself, yeah, that's one of the best teams in the world. Trophy or not in this competition, they will be, I will consider them that.
It's not how it works.
I didn't know there were rules to this.
Yeah.
So my opinion is
there
wrong.
Are. The best, the greatest English teams have won the Champions League. They go hand in hand with the domestic dominance.
You wanted to talk about Thierry Henry, and we'll do that when now they're playing Club Bruges Wednesday at 12:55.
Well, we don't have a drop for Thierry Henry watch yet.
No.
So no. I'm just going to go, c'est maintenant. Oh, maintenant, c'est un temps pour.
What does that mean?
Regardez Thierry Henry.
You say this every time you talk about him.
It's time to watch Thierry Henry. They went to Strasbourg and they lost. But it was horrific, the first goal that was conceded. And I'm not going to say that Henry will come in straight away and turn things around. That's not how football works. But he must have been just, come on, give me a break. Give me a decent start. It's a shot straight at the goalkeeper, and he flaps at it, hits his arm, and goes into the back of the net, and you're 1-0 down. So a defeat for Thierry Henry in his first game.
Yeah, and they're in a tough situation right now. They're bottom in Group A, 0 points. Dortmund and Atletico Madrid actually play each other. They are each top with 6 points. That should be a good one as well. Let's see. Like I said, we'll be back on Thursday with a recap of what went down in the Champions League. Before we get out, we do have a mailbag.
We get out, it's an enormous mailbag.
Yeah, I know. But this is the last thing we're going to do today.
By the way, I need to mention that the David Ngoe goal was the last goal of two. It was the second goal of two in that game in 09. I can vividly remember.
What do you have there, what the situation was?
The Fernando Torres goal. Liverpool were 1-0 up. It was at the start of the league. Actually, Liverpool had a terrible start to the league. And it was a brilliant... The first goal was a brilliant goal. I remember that. But for the life of me, I don't really remember the Ngoe goal. Mailbag at COSoccerPod, caughtoffsidepod at gmail.com. Anne Eskowitz, sup fellas, I'm writing in only to beg you, please, please do not mention Usain Bolt. He's on every damn ESPN podcast I listen to, and I can't handle it anymore. Craig Burley and I are on the same page if you listen to ESPN FC. I wouldn't even care this time if you talk about Rooney. Just please don't discuss Bolt. I'm bolted out. Well, Anne, this is where we've got a problem. You don't seem to be the only one that is bolted out. After rumours of a contract offer to Bolt by Central Coast Mariners, their manager Mike Mulvey seemed to want to distance himself from the Bolt talk too. He even seemed to be unaware yesterday of such a deal being offered to the Jamaican.
I do appreciate how important this story is for the rest of the world. I do appreciate that, but you know, you have a look at our front line today, and you wonder whether he could get into any of those positions, wouldn't you?
Of course, yeah. So, where does that lead
him
then, I guess?
Well, you're just talking about speculation. I don't know anything about what you're talking about, man. That's God's honest truth.
It must be so annoying to him because...
Oh, he's preparing for...
Well, it is such a sideshow attraction because it's a guy who, you know, for as good as that game was where he scored two goals, like, good for him that he did it. That's impressive. But this is someone who will play no role whatsoever in whatever Central Coast Mariners are going to go on to do. And yet, like... All this guy is going to be talking about, presumably, is Usain Bolt. Like, it's such a non-issue for him. He probably couldn't care less, and yet having to answer one question after another.
I wonder, did ownership just offer him a contract to create a buzz around the team? Because it is the start of their season out there. They had a 1-1 draw at the weekend.
I'm sure they'll sell a ton of jerseys. There's no question about it. You know what the sad irony is of this? We had absolutely no intention of talking about Usain Bolt, and then this guy emails in...
No, Anne emails in.
Oh, Anne?
Yeah.
Anne emails the show to say, please don't talk about Usain Bolt. But now, in her doing that, she just made it a topic.
I'll mention, do you know Ross McCormack? He formerly of Aston Villa?
Yeah.
He's there on loan from Villa. And the only way in which Usain Bolt will get to play is if Ross McCormack locks himself behind the gates of his house like he did for Aston Villa.
Right, it's a non-issue.
Do you remember that? Remember that? That's how he fell out with Steve Bruce. I couldn't make training.
Oh, that's right.
He couldn't get the gates open.
That's right.
Cameron Aiken. Hi, guys. Cameron here. And I want to start off by saying thanks for putting out such a great podcast every week. You guys have a great companion to my growing passion for all things soccer. For my question, I was wondering if you guys or any of the listeners listening in would know how I could get my hands on a men's Megan Rapinoe USA jersey. I've been searching and it's almost like they don't exist. Thanks and keep up the good work. I would imagine the best move is to inquire with any shirt supplier and ask them to get Rapinoe 15 on the back of a men's jersey. It should be straightforward, right?
I'm shocked that that's not a thing that you can buy. I'm really surprised. I'm doing Google search right now myself.
Are they all women's cut shirts?
Amazon.com, local imprint, but that doesn't look like a real U.S. women's team jersey because they do have Rapinoe 15 in men's sizes here, but it's a T-shirt jersey. It's not.
But
like
surely you can
jersey.
Buy the blank jersey and then say, "Do you want a name on the back?" and just say Rapinoe 15.
Yeah, 100%. I'm sure you can do that.
Steve Bradican, how much has Ronaldo's brilliance been masking these issues of Real Madrid, or do we think it's more a perfect storm of failures? I remember who were we talking with a couple of weeks ago, and I think I brought up an article from Marca, which just said, "Oh, it was the." It was in the article from Marca that I read, which basically said, who would have thought Gareth Bale would get injured? Who would have thought Benzema would not score? Mm-hmm. You know, all these things coming together. And also, like we talked about in the Graham Hunter piece, this kind of inability to really get themselves together for the slog of a league season. David Hawker sent us a lovely email about how he listens to the podcast with his son, Jaden, every Friday night as they travel through rural Virginia.
That was nice. I saw that.
Yeah. Really hour nice. And a half trip to ODP training. So we're glad we're the soundtrack to it. And best of luck, Jaden, for your future career. Jason Higgins in Seattle. Why would Stephen Fry not be considered for the U.S. men's national team goalkeeper spot? I believe he would be eligible. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he never capped for the Swiss and is a U.S. citizen. Well, he is a citizen and he's already been called in. But you've forgotten it was under Bruce Arena in the January 2017 camp, but he sprained his ankle and went home. Travis Hall, with an email we seem to get regularly about a striker. I have a question in regards to Sergio Aguero. Over the past few years, Real Madrid have been linked to strikers like Lewandowski and Kane. Why is Aguero never mentioned? Is he not considered to be in the same class? Because personally, I think he is a better player than Lewandowski and equal to Kane. Now, this is one of those things where I guess this is a Man City fan or a Sergio Aguero fan, but I mean, the answer is that he's regularly mentioned in moves to Real Madrid. So I did a little Google search. That's all it took. The last mention of a potential move to Real Madrid was shot down by him in June of this year, and that was in the Manchester Evening News. Then I saw another one in The Guardian last November linking Aguero with a move to Real Madrid. The Daily Star said he was set for his move to Real Madrid last December. So I guess it happens quite regularly. Logan Barnes, I do have a question for the both of you. It looks like for the first time in a while, many of the major European leagues are going to have real title races, which honestly is a refreshing change. Which league do you think will have the longest title race this year? I believe the English Premier League and Serie A have the potential to decide league champions on the final match day. Love to hear your thoughts. I'm saying that Manchester City clicking into gear plus their phenomenal stats of almost 22 shots per game, that's insanity, worries me, and that we aren't going to get that title race we really wanted in England. Spain looks like a potential good one. I don't think I'm fully convinced by the potential of a Napoli-Inter challenge in Italy to Juventus. Looking at it, Germany feels like it has the best potential at the moment, but it is only October.
Yeah, Bayern Munich are fourth right now. Borussia Dortmund first, Mönchengladbach second, Werder Bremen are third. At some point, it's not just about Bayern Munich. We all assume they'll get hot at some point and get back into the race, but you know that doesn't mean that Borussia Dortmund will cool off. Dortmund could continue to be as good as they have been. So, yeah, I think that one could be a real race. I think the Premier League looks like it's shaping up to be a good race. I think I agree with you. In Spain, the question for me is whether or not Barcelona eventually pulls away and if Real Madrid have already dug themselves too big of a hole, Atletico Madrid too. Because I just don't know. Until I see Espanyol or Alaves, you know, or even Sevilla, stay in a title race long term, it's just hard for me to imagine that they will.
Look, it's hard to envision a Barcelona town, a Barcelona city based 1 and 2, as much as it
How amazing would that be?
Marcus Riley Kane, he contacted us to make some points about Austin being great for MLS, because we were kind of like on the negative of the... It's not negative about Austin having an MLS team. It's
No, I was saying that I hope Austin gets a team. I just didn't want it to be at the expense of another city.
Right. Well, he contacted us to say Austin would be great for MLS with a great site for a potential stadium. There's a lot of business there. Yeah. It's booming. Dell Computers. Barcelona have an academy there. He says the area that the stadium was proposed to be in if the Crew transferred to Austin is a booming high-end outdoor mall and residential venture called The Domain and The Domain Northside. Rhea in Bermuda, do you think Zlatan warrants any of these awards or is this just media hype? That's the MLS MVP nominee, MLS Newcomer of the Year nominee and Comeback Player of the Year nominee. Or nominations, rather, I should say, for Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
That is not media hype. He absolutely warrants those. Right now, he's got 22 goals in 23 starts and 10 assists to go with that. His 22 is second only behind Joseph Martinez's 30. So Zlatan has been, oh my God, he's been absolutely enormous for the Galaxy this season. It may still turn out to not be enough, and no one's saying he's going to win MVP, but Newcomer of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year, for the injury he was coming off of, yeah, sure, I've got no issue with him taking home those awards.
I honestly have no issue with Wayne Rooney and Johnny Russell of Sporting KC being included in that either.
For a Newcomer?
For all those. Every single one.
Comeback Player also?
Yeah. Wayne Rooney coming back from...
What's he coming back from? Just like...
Everton.
No, I think Zlatan, that is not... I understand why you would ask that question, but no, that's not media hype to me.
Jacob Semkin, curious to get your thoughts on the proposed League MX and MLS Super League. Do you think it could work? Could it be beneficial for young US talent to play higher level opposition, or would MLS sides opt to bring in better South American and European talent in place? So this is the talk of a merger into one massive league of MLS and League MX that's been talked about. The rumor was fairly strong about 10 days ago, and it would be after World Cup 2026 in North America. What's your thoughts?
Nah.
I have thoughts.
I don't know. I think you feel more strongly about it than I do, but I'm not in favor of it. I think that,
I mean, what does he mean?
CONCACAF Champions League, those matches feel special when an MLS side takes on a Liga MX side. But to merge the two leagues, I just don't think it's necessary.
I think from a marketing standpoint, from a money standpoint, from those standpoints, I think I'm sure it could work. But what do you mean by work? And I would say that it would not benefit the development of US soccer. Don't forget this little line from Jeff Carlisle months ago. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, the percentage of minutes for US-born players has fallen from 52.7% in 2013 to 42.2% last season. That's MLS. And the numbers drop further when the number looks only at players eligible to play for the US. That number shrunk to 37.7% from around 52% in 2012. That is a worry. And that would decrease in this newer league. The newer league will be about basically making money and bringing the best players to that Super League. It would not be about the development or minutes of US soccer players, and that would be a worry. Finally, Ebby plays college soccer and needs some book suggestions for his long bus rides to away games. I'm just going to give him one book, How to Be a Footballer, Peter Crouch, Ebury Press, available on Amazon for Kindle. It's hilarious. But it's really, really good. And I like Peter Crouch even more from reading it. So there you go.
Nice. Yeah, he's a character. That's good. By the way, before we get out, I do want to mention that the Washington Post has reported, and Jeff Carlisle also has an article up, that Dan Flynn, famously of the U.S. Soccer Federation, CEO and Secretary General of the U.S. Soccer Federation, is going to be stepping down sometime next year. There's a lot of casual soccer fans out there who will think, why does that name sound so familiar? Well, if you'll remember, he was the guy he was basically Sunil Gulati's right-hand man. And Bruce Arena was going to be installed as U.S. soccer coach. At least this is the way Bruce Arena tells it. and replacing Jurgen Klinsmann. But then Dan Flynn needed a heart transplant and had to go in for heart surgery. So Neil Gulati, I suppose, was a little bit uncomfortable making that decision unilaterally, wanted Flynn by his side, but Flynn was dealing with his heart issue. And so the decision was delayed. Klinsmann remained U.S. manager. Things got worse. Bruce Arena then took over later on when they finally did get around to making the move, and the rest is history. So that is probably where many of you are thinking, I've heard that name before. But Dan Flynn has been a member of U.S. Soccer Federation for a long time, since 2000, when U.S. Soccer was, you know, not in the position, I know it's hard to say this, but from a financial standpoint, not in a position of strength. And he was instrumental in making a lot of that happen. He was also on the United Bid Committee for this World Cup with Canada and Mexico. So it's a very proud career. Dan Flynn, 63 years old. He'll retire sometime next year. So congrats to him on, you know, a good run, a bit of a rocky run towards the end. But he did a lot for U.S. soccer.
No, we wish him well.
Yeah. So there you go, my friend. Oh, man, that is a robust, solid podcast there.
It's a meaty podcast. I'm glad we got it out tonight.
Yeah, lots of midweek Champions League action. We'll be back on Thursday afternoon to recap much of that and look ahead to the weekend, of course. El Clasico coming up over the weekend. It's there's a lot going on. Lots happening. Final weekend of MLS before the postseason. So good times indeed. To you, I say,
take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.